More Idaho Matters now from the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Wildfires and other climate-fueled disasters are straining insurance markets. Recently, officials met in Boise to compare notes on how to avoid what some call the uninsurable future. The Mountain West News Bureau's Murphy Woodhouse has more.
It's a nightmare scenario for many homeowners in the West. Several spot fires are burning near two small homes. The structures seem identical, but the more you look, differences pop out. The one on the right has a wooden fence and trees up to the walls. The other has sparser landscaping, farther from the home, and a metal fence. Its stone walkway now serves as a non-combustible shield.
If you notice the small fires that are burning.
While the fire is very real, the homes are little more than sheds, and the spot fires were intentionally set. The demonstration in a gravel lot at the National Interagency Fire Center was part of a recent forum in Boise put on by several insurance groups. Steve Hawks and Ann Cope are with the Insurance Institute for Business and Home Safety, a nonprofit and event host.
On the right-hand side are all those little green gas cans that other people call shrubs.
From the wood mulch, the spot fires on the right spread to the trees, fence, and home itself. Then the wind gusts. The poorly prepared home is now fully engulfed, but just a few steps away, the fire-ready structure seems undamaged.
That's really the point of this demonstration, is to give you that side-by-side view of a home that's prepared for wildfire versus one that is not.
Experts warn that climate change's promise of more frequent home-destroying wildfires puts strain on insurance markets. A number of insurers in California have already limited coverage or stopped issuing new policies.
We haven't had any company pull out of the state, unlike California or other places, but we're seeing them contract.
Idaho Department of Insurance Director Dean Cameron thinks home hardening steps like fire-safe roofs and landscaping can help bring premiums down.
We're moving forward with the idea, probably this next legislative session, of creating a mitigation pool where we'll help homeowners be able to harden their homes, make sure that they've got defensible space.
He'd also like to see legislation address the soaring costs of reinsurance, policies that providers take out to protect against massive claims.
In the Marshall Fire is estimated to be a $2 billion event.
The wind-driven Marshall Fire killed two and destroyed more than 1,000 Colorado homes in late 2021. High-ranking insurance officials from Colorado, Hawaii, and Texas, all impacted by catastrophic recent fires, were on hand to share their experiences.
On top of folks losing their homes, then that becomes a real struggle just to simply find a place to live. Right?
That's Jason Lapham, Colorado's Deputy Commissioner for Property and Casualty Insurance. He agrees that home and community wildfire risk mitigation is key, but says there's an opaqueness in how insurance companies account for it.
How do we see those things more transparently reflected in the modeling that companies are using to assess the risk and ultimately decide whether or not to issue coverage to someone or how much to charge?
His state, like California, also has a new public insurance program for those who can't find insurance through traditional providers. He says it's no silver bullet and that no single measure can solve the problem. Back at the demo burn, Boise firefighters are tending to a pile of charred wood and ash, all that remains of one of the homes. Asked about the prospect of better incorporating mitigation efforts into insurance pricing, Roy Wright, the Insurance Institute's CEO, says there is some movement in that direction.
Insurers drive their price based on risk, and when risks go down, prices follow.
With the smoking ash pile and one still standing structure nearby, he says impacts on premiums aren't the most important thing mitigation can do. Having a place to come home to also matters. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Murphy Woodhouse.
And Murphy is joining us live now to talk more about this. Murphy, it's always nice to have you on the program.
Good morning, Gemma.
So, Murphy, it is not every single day that you actually get to go out and watch a building burn to the ground. So I'm curious, what did you take away from this fairly dramatic demonstration?
Yeah, it was for me definitely one of those, you know, picture thousand words situations. And if this is something you're interested in, I'd certainly encourage listeners to go online to see the web version of the story, because there are a number of pictures of the incident as well as a video that I took of the structure side by side. If you just kind of want to see it for yourself, it's definitely not a new idea in the West, but I think that this demonstration made it very visceral. You know, there are real concrete steps that you can take to substantially improve the chances of your home surviving a wildfire roofing, eaves, landscaping, gutters, all of it. And on the landscaping front, folks here in Boise have the additional advantage of the fact that Idaho FireWise actually runs a demonstration garden at the Idaho Botanical Garden right here in Boise. So I think there's this idea that a fire-safe landscape is an unsightly one, and I think that a visit there would be a pretty good way at settling that debate pretty quickly. So anyway, back to the event itself. You know, Idaho Governor Brad Little was on hand for the event, and he took the opportunity to issue a proclamation, which is, of course, something that governors are wont to do.
So whereas citizens should also take steps to prepare their homes and communities, now therefore I, Brad Little, governor of the state of Idaho, do hereby proclaim May as Wildfire Awareness Month here in Idaho. And I urge all Idaho citizens to take the necessary steps, and most importantly, to remember those people that are out on the front line, keeping them and our communities safe.
So, Murphy, can we hear a little bit more?
Yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No problem at all. I was just going to say, you know, now almost 3 weeks into Wildfire Awareness Month, and, you know, as a former wildland firefighter, I just couldn't agree more with what the governor just said there. You know, if you're going to expect my friends and former colleagues to show up in your neighborhood facing both substantial short and long-term risk, I think that needs to be a two-way street. You know, people go into fire because they want to help their communities, but I think you can show your appreciation by making your home a safer and more survivable structure. And I think there's also an element of what we owe our neighbors, right? I recently reported on an academic article looking at some of the most devastating recent wildfires in the U.S., Lahaina, Colorado's Marshall Fire, things like that. In that paper, they talk about how those incidents could be better thought of as urban conflagrations started by wildfire, not as extensions of wildfires themselves. To put it more crudely, the homes themselves are the fuel. So your lack of preparation could have profound consequences for your neighbors, who themselves may have taken the necessary and sometimes costly steps to improve their properties. But anyway, the full context of this event and the demonstration was the relationship between increasingly extreme climate-fueled and home-destroying wildfires that are straining insurance markets across the West, probably nowhere as spectacularly as California. And I've been chatting pretty regularly with the state's former insurance commissioner, Dave Jones, and he's been talking about what he calls the steady march toward a possible uninsurable future. And I kind of use that provocation as the framing for this story.
So Murphy, I'm curious then, what are some of the proposals that you're hearing from officials about how states can prepare for this situation and maybe avoid this uninsurable future?
Yeah, so from Idaho Department of Insurance Director Dean Cameron, we heard about the possibility of the state legislature coming up with a fund or a pool of funds to help homeowners carry out mitigation work on their properties. But I think it's also worth saying that a major wildfire commission last year released a massive report with dozens of recommendations. Among them, it suggested that mitigation is most effective, quote, at the scale of entire neighborhoods or communities, not only individual parcels. It further talks about the importance of updating building codes and planning documents to reflect wildfire risk, all of which it says could, quote, positively impact insurance affordability and availability. But Jason Lapham, who was at this event, and he's Colorado's deputy commissioner for property and casualty insurance, he says there's an opaqueness in how insurance companies account for such improvements. And he says his office is going to continue to push for more transparency on that front. And in Oregon, we actually have an example where that's actually been approached legislatively. So last year, state lawmakers passed a bill that requires insurers to take home hardening and other efforts into their underwriting guidelines. And that's according to reporting in the Oregon Capital Chronicle. But when the reporter of that story followed up with a couple of the largest insurers, they told her that they would not be rewarding such efforts with more stable or lower premiums. And I think just for a moment, I think it's worth talking a little bit about the relatively new fair access to insurance requirements plan in Colorado. These are, you know, essentially like insurers of last resort plans. Other states like California already have established them. And when people can't find insurance through traditional markets, Lapham acknowledges that they're not a silver bullet and that no policy is, and that this is kind of just a backstop. But in previous conversations, Jones has told me that, you know, those plans can be quite expensive because they're essentially the riskiest properties. And Cameron, Idaho's insurance director, he also says he's pretty skeptical of their possible effectiveness.
So you mentioned California just a moment ago, Murphy, and I know you've done some reporting on that, and you recently reported on a legislative effort in that state that you think might have some relevance.
Yeah, so that's Senate Bill 1060, and you know I realize it's a California bill, but I promise that this is the relevance hopefully will be clear. So as I understand it, you know it's pretty similar to Oregon's bill in that it requires insurers to incorporate home hardening and other improvements into their underwriting models. That's what insurance companies use to determine whether or not they will insure someone or renew insurance. But here's the key distinction that Jones, the former California insurance commissioner, says makes this unique as a legislative effort, not just in the West, but across the whole country, as far as he's aware. It also requires those models to take into account landscape scale interventions with a proven record of substantially reducing wildfire risk. Those are things that people in Idaho are very familiar with: prescribed burns, fuels reductions efforts, things of that nature. That, you know, the literature is clear on this. In many landscapes, those efforts really reduce the risk of catastrophic wildfire. And so I won't try to explain the logic. I think that Jones does a very good job of some of the thinking behind this legislation.
And it's very frustrating because here in California, the state has appropriated $3.7 billion towards forest treatment, and local governments and homeowners associations and individual homeowners are all in various ways undertaking mitigation: home hardening, defensible space, community mitigation, forest treatment. And yet they're seeing no benefit in terms of the insurer's decisions to write or renew insurance.
So I checked in on that bill this morning, and it looks like it's made it through two committees, despite opposition from insurance companies. And in our conversation, Jones acknowledged the elephant in the room, the sort of instinctive skepticism that many in the West have towards basically everything California. And he had a ready response to that. And his basic point is, don't think that this is going to stay isolated to California, Florida, and Louisiana. Climate change does not respect state boundaries, and weather-driven events don't respect state boundaries, he told me. But I do want to do justice to what Jones was you know, the several conversations I've had with him. You know, he obviously thinks that there are, you know, legislative ways to make the situation a little bit better. But ultimately, the principal issue is climate change and our collective failure so far to do what scientists have been screaming to the wind for decades, that we need to dramatically reduce the burning of fossil fuels and transition to a low or no carbon economy. And that's really going to take a lot more than tweaking insurance models. And it's certainly going to require dramatic action on all levels, from the household all the way to the international arena.
So Murphy, before we let you go, I know you also looked at a study about cultural burning. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And so this is going to we're going to leave insurance just a little bit, but I think that, you know, what we were just talking about, I think really says a lot about, I think, just the very obvious reality that we're currently not living with wildfire very well. And so I recently did a story on a new paper out that has tried to estimate the scale of what is known as cultural burning. And cultural burning is basically the many ways that a number of indigenous peoples in the United States for time immemorial have used fire for a number of purposes, for, you know, essentially managing resources, for agricultural purposes, for ceremonial purposes. And, you know, this paper focused on a massive landscape in I believe they're known as the Karuk traditional or aboriginal territories. That's in Northern California, the traditional lands of the Karuk people. Mm-hmm. And using, you know, historical records, testimonies from old ethnographies, you know, current testimonies from tribal members, you know, they tried to estimate how much fire was on the ground, and they came up with some absolutely eye-popping numbers. They estimated that annually, 7,000 fires on a 650,000 acre piece of ground were set annually, and that burned something like 15% of that territory every single year. And so, like, wow. You know, we now think of wildfire as this like extraordinary, disruptive, sometimes tragic presence in our lives. But I think that, you know, learning more about the way that the indigenous people who have been in this country or in this territory for much longer than than many of our ancestors, I think that it really provides an interesting way to think about, you know, what a different way of living with fire might be.
Well, Murphy, as always, so appreciate you coming in and talking with us about all of this. Appreciated your time.
Awesome. Thank you, Gemma.
We've been talking with Mountain West News Bureau reporter Murphy Woodhouse discussing how wildfires and other disasters are straining insurance markets. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.